this and this.
Right. I probably have to go.
Okay.
Yes. But I love IDEA too. So,
okay. That's fine. I think this is something that Giri and I need to sort out.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Alright.
Sorry about
thanks.
That.
Yeah.
Thanks for hanging around.
So, and I'm assuming a partitionable cache. So this is totally a hypothetical situation, but
yeah.
It simplifies the problem. There is
yeah.
no other reason.
Partitionable.
Without
okay.
looking at simpler problems, there's no point in looking at harder problems. So it's partitionable, so I can decide how much space this guy is allocated, and then
yeah.
after that, there's no question of wastage because that's
no wastage. No wastage. Yeah. This is a bandwidth
but,
packing
and,
problem.
Correct. And the reuse and flood rates are only going to be with respect to itself. It's all self-inflicted stuff.
Right.
So, but then if you, so all that means is reuse rate plus flood rate is simply the number of accesses, meaning how intense it is.
Right. But we cannot use only the reuse and flood of a single ankle point here. Because that's not the real reuse and flood rate for that working
so
set.
So the problem is, it's an averaging over how much? Is that what the problem is?
No, the problem
by
is not,
a smaller
no.
phase within a more intense phase within a larger phase. By that you mean the average over this phase is such, but over here it's going to be fairly intense. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, and the bandwidth needs to sustain that intense phase.
For that period or during that period.
Yeah. So that is the requirement of that phase.
But my point would be that then I would work in that phase. Then I would work with that MRC. So it's possible that I'm oversimplifying. But why is this unreasonable? Is the question.
Yeah, the problem is the way we specify the ERSS tree nodes.
Right. So
is that every node has a size, and every node has a reuse and flood rate,
right.
And the hierarchy is such that the reuse and flood rates at upper levels are typically smaller than the reuse and flood rates at lower levels.
How much is the ERSS tree meaningful in partitionable caches?
It's very meaningful. You need to map each of these nodes into specific partitions at specific
that
levels.
That I understand.
Right.
There's no argument there. But isn't the ERSS tree itself a lot simpler
than
in a non-partitionable cache? Or is it independent of whether it's partitionable?
It's independent. It's a workload property. It's independent of partitionable and non-partitionable. It's just that if you want to compute wastage, then you get to use the reuse and flood rates. But even if you don't have wastage issues,
yeah.
you still need to make sure that in your partitionable cache,
yeah.
the amount of bandwidth you have at a specific cache level can sustain the reuse and flood rates for the node that you're trying to fit into a cache level.
Okay, so you're saying that, because the way I've defined the problem, everything works in a phase, and I don't know anything more. All the data, all the information that's being thrown at me is for this phase.
Right.
And for that phase, I've been given an MRC. I may be given an ERSS tree, although I don't particularly use it at this point because a lot of that only includes the flood rate and reuse rate, which I'm going to use only for
the
packing version.
By the way, if it's a single phase, you would have only one ankle point. When you have multiple ankle points,
no, that's not true.
If you have multiple ankle points, typically, that means that you have multiple phases.
No, but even
one
if I were to write
point.
A simple, you know, let's say two nested for loops, depending on how much cache I assign to it, the miss rate will change.
Right.
So those
but
are all ankle points.
But there are two phases in there. One phase which runs within a single loop of the inner for loop.
Yeah.
It has a much smaller ERSS because it accesses very few variables.
Yeah, okay,
there.
Got it. Yeah, now I understand.
And then you have a larger phase which includes both for
right.
loops.
But if I look at this larger phase and I come up with an MRC, that's final. And it will have
two ankle points, but it will also have two types of phases with the second phase, the smaller phase, running several times within
but
the larger phase.
But it's still within the constraints of this in terms of, remember, I'm not looking at reuse rate and flood rate. I'm only looking at miss rate and size.
Right. With miss rate and size, there is no problem. I'm talking about the problem which occurs when you go into the vector
Right, but then I would have a second dimension. So you're saying that
for the
that
second
dimension
is
not
much more complicated, is what I'm saying.
It's not just a sequence of.
It's not just a single value of flood and reuse
that's
at that specific
point.
Ankle
so,
point.
So there, because it's not two-dimensional, ankle points don't mean it. What are ankle points? So that's not clear.
Ankle points are still valuable. All I'm
but do you get a three-dimensional step or what?
No, all I'm saying is that in some sense, this part of the working set is a working set size, but let's say these working set elements are flood, induce flood and reuse rates of this value, right?
Yeah.
And this part induce flood and reuse rates of a different value.
So
if you want to fit...
So it seems like you're saying the situation looks something like this. I don't even know if I can draw this sucker. And you know, they will all go in some strange way. I could have stuff going, and it would be possible for me to draw this nicely. But
what are the
I'm saying that this will look like a step thing. See, in 2D, a step function looks like that. In 3D, it could, you know, there would be a series of steps going off in different directions.
Right.
And it looks like you have something like this because you have the miss rate, the size, and reuse and flood rates.
Right. But the miss rate is a benefit function, so we can forget about that.
That's just the y-axis.
Mm-hmm. It's just a benefit function that you get, and you want to optimize for that.
Yeah.
But what you want to pack are, on one dimension, the size, and on the other dimension, the sum of the flood and reuse rates.
Right.
All I'm saying, it's not that we don't have to
go to another
dimension. All I'm saying is that with our existing model of two dimensions still works, because all we need to do is to recognize that now the vector packing is a two dimension, where the first dimension is the size and the second dimension is actually the sum of the reuse rates and sum of plus the sum of the flood rates at all the ankle points above this ankle point until you get to an ankle point that has already been put in a cache level.
I don't see all that. Yeah, okay, fine.
So for instance, here...
At a lower level, you mean?
At a lower level of the cache.
Yes.
Hierarchy.
Okay, so then let me think about this. So you have that much size that you've assigned it. So you're saying...
The size is fine.
No, that I understand. But let's say something like this, and you have assigned this much at a lower level cache.
Yeah.
So let's say this has been done at L1. Mm. Now you're saying you're going to look for at L2...
Yeah,
you're going to pick something that that takes care of everything in this range.
Yes.
And that's the entire reuse and flood rate of all the ankle
all the points. Ankle points from here to here.
But are they different workloads? They're one workload.
They're the same workload.
Uh-huh.
That's why the ERSS is the same.
Uh-huh.
There's a single ERSS. We don't need to provision size for all of those ankle points. Well, that one ankle point ERSS includes all the ERSS of the other ankle points. But the flood and reuse rates, the way we define it,
I can easily address that by saying that it depends on where the previous point is. Then. Yeah.
Right, but we could just fix that very easily in the tree itself by saying this node, reuse and flood rates, are actually the sum of all the reuse and flood rates
of
below it. But that doesn't work because we need to subtract the reuse and flood rates of this guy.
So the fact that this hasn't been if you treat them as separate problems, then it's fine. But if you treat them as one unified problem, then it's not so fine. I'd have to think about it. But my guess is that ultimately, what I'm trying to say is that unless you're able to solve the simplest version, forget about all of this. You're never going to make much progress here with this approach. It would just need a different approach.
Right.
That's all that it's saying. And maybe what is necessary here is to say that clearly this problem doesn't address all the practicalities of this situation. For instance, blah blah blah. If one has to deal with reuse rates and flood rates of previous ankle points, things like this. So we need to say how some of these more complicated versions show up.
Right, exactly. If we can formulate, let's say, the cache mapping problem as a single problem for mapping across the entire hierarchy, where we map in stages, right? So first we, and every stage is independent, except that after the first stage, the MRCs change. Right? They get modified. We get rid of some ankle points and such.
Right.
And then we apply exactly the same technique for the next stage.
So maybe you should explain to me why. So let's say I assign this for L1.
Yeah.
And I assign, well, I don't even know why I should be doing, well, okay. So let's say I assign this for L2. So you want it to go a little further down.
Right.
Let's see. I just put another ankle point here. Right. And so why? So let's say this ankle point is associated with some reuse and flood rate, blah, blah, blah. Why am I adding all those guys? Why are they different? Why are they almost treated like different workloads? Because they're different phases. Why should they add up?
The reuse and flood rates, because
but then they are, aren't they disjoint phases?
No, one phase is embedded within another phase.
So why am I adding them?
Because when you're accessing one of those phases, you're also accessing maybe something in the next phase, which is why that's a larger phase.
So that's why it's maybe I'm totally confused about phase then. If let's say this is my sequence of accesses, I think of phase as some portion here based on some considerations that you guys have, which says, okay, properties here, if I'm able to extract the things like reuse rate, flood rate, MRC, and if things are roughly averaged nicely, then that's a phase.
So 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. That's repeatedly accessed, that's a phase. But then I have
three smaller faces.
No, X, Y.
Okay.
And then I have a larger face.
Yeah.
That has X, Y repeating.
Okay. Yeah.
So this face contains accesses to the guys that represent the larger face, but they are also being done within the smaller face.
Right. But then I have computed everything. The mesh rate curve tells me. What's the how I'm going to perform if I'm given this size? So, why is it not already taking into account this subset?
The miss rate is fine.
Yeah.
The miss rate that tells you the benefit. Yeah.
Okay.
But what we're talking about here is the cost, because the cache needs to be accessed,
and you need to
provision bandwidth.
Yeah.
That's what affects the packing of the second dimension. The miss rate just tells you what the benefit you get. How much you reduce the miss rate.
Yeah.
And the reuse and flood rate
tell you how much of your access.
What is the cost?
Okay.
In along one of the dimensions, which is the bandwidth dimension.
Okay.
But now that I look at it this way, it's not actually the sum of the flood and reuse rate, it's just a max. The max, which would be this guy.
But if it is max, I can just take it as a max of everything here, and at each point I'll write down the max of everything before this. I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's actually pretty straightforward modifications, right? So let's say you have L1. The max would be this guy. So the size requirement is this. Flood reuse rate is this.
Yeah.
And then you do the vector packing. And then once you have this, then you kind of get rid of this entire MRC.
Yeah, but you're going to do a uniform. If you're going to write down one problem, then what happens here depends on what you pick here. So that's a challenge. It's not easy to formulate.
No, but if you say, like, given an MRC, I do a packing step, and then I get a new MRC.
Yeah, but then you're getting into the algorithm. So you're now suggesting a heuristic algorithm. the formulation of the problem should be independent of the algorithm. It needs to be independent of the algorithm.
So the problem is,
what it is that you're,
the problem is already fine. What you have here is already fine, which is, well, do a after vector packing, except that when you go to the vector
for the next level,
for the reuse and flood rates, pick
for the next
max,
level,
yeah.
Now you kind of
no, not for the next level, for the same level,
uh-huh.
For the first level, when you're doing so, vector packing.
So for the first level, it's easy because what I'll do is I will write down here what is the maximum of everything that I've seen before this. It's just that I need to formulate the problem for L2,
hmm.
And when I do that, I'm going to say, okay, I've already assigned this much for L1, so now I know what to pick for L2 because I've ignored all these. And what are the new maximas here?
Hmm.
So it's, ultimately it becomes static numbers because I've pre-computed.
Yeah, I don't know much about how would you best formulate this, but this is basically what we
so
need to
in achieve. Order to formulate it, because of what you just said, it looks like I can pre-compute it, which
hmm.
means I can treat that as part of the input.
Hmm. Yes.
Okay. For all the ankle points, if you give me the reuse and flood rates, then all I'm going to do is I'm going to write it down in such a way that when I write down the this particular ankle point, I've already maximized. The third coordinate already picked the maximum of all these values. So I'm just going to write it that way.
Yeah.
So
and the
I'm
maximum,
going to assume that
the
second coordinate is only increasing. So that's all that matters in some sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe. No, I don't want to max. I don't want to put a maximum already because in the L2 I have to remove all those other previous values. But that's not a real complication. That's actually all right. I can still think of it as an independent third coordinate or second coordinate. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm not thinking about this right.
I still don't understand this business of max. I have to say I at some inkling, but really I don't understand it.
The max is required. I was just thinking if we can change the ERSS tree itself to always have the max at every node, that doesn't work because...
No, it doesn't.
It
because
doesn't
then for
work.
Your L2, you have to go and recompute the guys. So, I take that back. But I can statically compute it.
You can
just before I give it to the input to the next level. That's my point.
Yeah, but that's how I think it should be formulated. I think it should be formulated this way, which makes it more believable and also more usable than the formulation where we are relying on some sort of a magical merge.
No, but then it assumes that I first solve L1 before I solve L2, before I solve L3. So again, that becomes a algorithm-dependent formulation. It's not an independent formulation. So it's not the maximum that I write down later depends on what I picked for the previous one. But I don't need to...
Say that I'm going to change the MRC, right, and have the exact same formulation at every stage.
Then all I need to do is to say that I have a subroutine that given a bunch of MRCs and these values, I can solve the packing at this level. That's all I need. Because for the next level, I recompute the MRCs and provided updated values. Who cares?
Right. That's
so as far as the subroutine is concerned, it doesn't know, it doesn't care.
Right, exactly. So that would be the subroutine would be the formulation is what I'm saying.
I see. Okay, now I understand what you're saying. So you're saying add a couple of sentences that says what happens at the second level, how this subroutine could be used to solve the second level. Okay,
exactly.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That sounds fine.
So I think then the really thorny problem of the merge, which I personally feel...
is done away with. It's irrelevant, so to speak.
Yeah, it's kind of... I don't see how we can
make it useful. Let me tell you why I think it's useful, because these were the questions that I was going to work with Mario anyways, because I think they're kind of mildly interesting. Well, actually, they're very interesting. So the simplest problem I can think of is I have two copies of the same workload, right? So as you were saying, let's say these are two queries to some Google server. So they're basically two copies of the same workload. Their characteristics are very similar. I want to know when I merge them what the resulting looks like. I can't think of a simpler problem, really. If this is so, if I can't solve this, then forget about anything more complicated. Now, the only thing that complicates this is the relative speeds of access, right? So, since I don't know this, it becomes very hard because there could be arbitrary interleaving, which means that the resulting thing could have very wildly varying MRCs and characteristics. So what I'm
saying,
when
you say relative speeds, it's a single request, right? It's a single request.
No,
right?
I look at this workload as a sequence of accesses.
Sequence of queries.
Accesses, no? So this is
a sequence of axes that satisfy a single Google query.
Right. Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is all part of a single phase, and for you a phase would perhaps be a query. And that's
full query, yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
That's fine. Yeah. So I have another thing which has different axes, of course, but it's very similar characteristics. So if the characteristics are the same, how should I deal with the situation where both of these are running on the same host?
Right.
Right.
So the way people, by the way, there are some people who have looked at this problem,
uh-huh.
and the way they do it is that for this, these are called like single instruction multiple data streams.
Okay.
Because they run the same instructions,
yes.
but they have multiple data.
Correct.
They may have data sharing. Right. So,
if they do, then it complicates the thing even more. So,
right.
I agree.
So, if they have data sharing, which is typically the case for threads within a single application,
okay,
then what could happen is that the data that they share and reuse very frequently, there would be a single copy of it in one of the caches.
Uh-huh.
And so, in some sense, which reinforces what I was talking about earlier, that your MRCs simply add up vertically.
But it can't, because there has to be this component also, because when you merge them, they both require this much space X for a miss of this, for this much. You have to double it if you want to put both of them on the same
track. You mean self-wastage? You're talking about self-wastage?
No wastage. All I'm saying is if I have to put two workloads, I'm going to roughly double the space.
But they share all the data. And so you need only one copy of the data itself in the cache.
What if they don't share? So maybe that's one case, but I was thinking of a situation where they don't share any data.
Then they're as good as two different workloads.
Right, but shouldn't I be able to figure out what the characteristics is of this merged sequence?
So the wastage formulation allows you to say what should be the cache size,
yes.
what should be the cache bandwidth,
yes.
with the reuse and flood rates and so on. Right?
Yes, but it should be, this should be a lot simpler than two arbitrary workloads, is my point. If I can't predict this one, then going to two arbitrary workloads is too difficult.
I think that without the data sharing, it's going to
be... So let me tell you a couple of different formulations that I think. So supposing I were to actually interleave these sequences, and I don't even bother to tell you this.
Hmm.
I tell you that this is one workload. It's not your business anyways. And so I have some interleaved sequence here, and now I just want to know what its characteristics are.
What are the cache requirements?
What are the characteristics of this workload? Characteristics could mean anything that...
Like the size and reuse rate and flood rate.
And the MRC and whatever else you want.
Hmm.
Right?
So the thing is that the way these workloads are isolated at the processor level is based on thread-level scheduling.
Yes.
So for every thread, you can get extract things like reuse and flood rates.
Yes.
So if those are two different threads, you will get per thread reuse and flood rates.
Okay.
And you should be able to construct per workload MRCs also.
So, but here I'm looking at the reverse problem. I have per workload MRCs. I want to know what is the MRC of this guy, because that's what I need for something else.
It would just be, so whatever ankle points you have.
So it depends on the wastage. So it depends on some interaction. Right? And the interaction depends on how it's interleaved over here.
I think what we are arguing in that paper, ERS's paper, is that the specific sequence doesn't matter. What matters are the rates of reuse and the rates of flood.
Fine. But if I put some constraints on this, what can you say? Supposing these are two threads and I tell you that they both get equal access to some processor. And I know that these are identical, these are, you know, copies of each other. So does that help you? So then I know that, you know, there is interleaving. There's going to be some weird stuff, but not a whole lot. Can I now say something about the characteristics of this?
So you mean like a combined MRC? What I don't understand is how do we use, I mean, how is this combined MRC any more useful than a single workload MRC?
Because now I have reduced the number of workloads in what I'm considering for the next, for my analysis.
Yeah, the problem with this is that if the workload is such that there are actually, for every ERSS value, there are two reuse and two flood rates, then which you don't see in an MRC. It's hard to construct a single MRC that will adequately describe these two workloads. Maybe you will be able to construct an MRC, but to use it for cache mapping, you're going to still think about reuse and flood rates, and then you're stuck, right? Because every ankle point of that MRC is, it does not give you a valid reuse and flood rate.
No, so that's a valid point. So what if I still solve it for, so it means that there are two phases, let's say, right, within this bigger phase, and for each of the phases, I solve the problem of what the merged characteristics look like. And all I'm saying is, if this thing moves to a different phase, I would just switch the curve over there, the miss rate curve, and whatever other characteristics there are, and work with a new merged one. I may not get one single one, but I think of that as a different phase, and I know its characteristics, and I know what the merge thing looks like, and I work with that.
Well, along the similar lines, you could, if you know that certain workloads are all, and certain phases in certain workloads are always going to run together,
yeah,
and you've already pre-computed the mapping for those MRCs and
right,
those workloads,
then
you could cache them as well.
You could just treat them as one workload. You don't even have to.
Yeah, because you have a already pre-existing mapping. You just load the mapping.
That's sort of what I was thinking. But if this doesn't make sense, that's fine. You have to tell me. I can't judge
whether
this makes sense or not.
I think the idea of, I mean, earlier it was kind of very appealing to me.
Yeah.
But the more I think about it, to me it seems like two workloads and having a combined representation of those two workloads is going to be very hard for the purposes of cache mapping. But if you want to construct an MRC, it may still be okay.
Be an interesting problem.
It may still be an interesting problem. But if you want to do, let's
yeah,
say, like, for a partitionable cache,
this
it
is
may
a,
be okay. So but I'm still not sure, because even for a partitionable cache, you have bandwidth requirements. And then as soon as you have bandwidth requirements, flood and reuse rate come. And in immersed
flood and reuse rates are not a problem. As I showed, they're just yet another dimension.
No, they are another dimension. But the problem with a merged workload is that every ankle point may have multiple flood and reuse rates.
And that would be okay.
And the combined flood and reuse rates could be a sum of those.
So much, yeah.
Yeah, could be a sum, could be some weird combination, which to me it's not clear how to use them.
Okay. See, I was going back to the basic problem that example that Ricardo had, where, you know, one workload was all A,
yeah,
the other was 1, 2, 3, 4 blah.
Right, right.
So when you interleave them, you could have 1A, 2A, 3A as
yes,
your interleaved one. Or if this is, let's say, twice as fast, you could have 1, 2A, 3, 4A, et cetera.
Right.
So what if I constrain how much they're off by?
You mean
their
relative speeds?
Their relative speeds. Can I now predict the worst case characteristics of this combined access sequence? This is what I was getting at.
Like the cache requirement.
Yeah.
You can, because as you change the allocations, your reuse and flood rates would change.
Right, but can I predict it without having to go through those things, without having to measure those things? That's really what I was trying to get at.
Right, so along those lines,
yeah,
the reuse and flood rate should, in my opinion, be directly proportional to the CPU allocation. If
because it's connected to the throughput, and because you've seen this, because of the behavior that you've seen in your experiment, this is what you're saying.
Right. Well, let's say you have a workload.
Just like squishing the,
yeah,
the axis.
Squishing the axis.
You're,
yeah,
saying, okay, I'm running this much. Yeah,
yeah, because I'm running faster,
yeah,
my rates go faster, which in proportion.
Okay. Yeah.
So then, given an allocation, I should be able to extrapolate the reuse and flood rates.
Yeah, but
and then
when
I would,
you interleave, things mess up, right? Because you get this wastage stuff. And so,
oh, you do, but the wastage occurs because you have changed reuse and flood rates.
Right.
Wastage depends on the reuse and flood rates, and therefore your wastage would change because those guys also change.
So even if we are able to actually quantify that, I think that it's an interesting foundational question. That's what I was getting at.
Okay. Yeah,
saying
I think
if I, these are all foundational things, saying, okay, from an access list, I should be able to predict its both its miss rate curve as well as flood and reuse rates. And then what if I interleave them in some constrained way?
Right, and you would interleave them in constrained way by changing the CPU allocation.
Correct, absolutely. That's
and
what
that's
it's supposed to reflect.
And that's really great because that's
exactly what it's supposed to reflect.
Yeah, we need to have a formal
that's
problem.
That's exactly my point. So what,
yeah,
you know, we want to understand the effect of that knob of,
yeah,
making the
CPU allocation
more or less, and that's what this tries to get to the core of.
Right. So that would, in my opinion, it should be as simple as, well, if you increase CPU allocation by a factor of 100, then the reuse and flood rates would increase by the same factor, and all the...
But when you increase something, something else decreases. So you have to kind of take both into account.
Right. So the reuse is defined as the items that get reused. That doesn't change.
Yes.
The flood, defined as items that don't get reused. That doesn't change.
Yes.
That is independent of CPU allocation.
That's true.
The rates will change. Right? Because as you give more CPU,
because
the rate
dividing by proportionally large number, why should it change?
No, for a single workload, if you give twice as much CPU clock cycles per second,
yeah, why should it change?
Then the rate at which you're accessing reuse items.
No, but so let's say I'm doing this versus this, right? That's what you're saying. If I'm able to do this much in unit time versus I'm able to do this much in unit time. If let's say I have, all the rates are uniform, let's say, then all these rates should be the same. I'm going to divide by a larger number here, and I'm going to divide by a smaller number here.
The only reason the rates become different is because there are other guys that you're comparing against, right? So if you're doing more, let's say twice as much, then instead,
yeah,
of 1A, 2A, you have 1AA, 2AA, 3AA.
Right.
That's what's happening.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So the reuse rate for workload 1 became twice, the reuse rate for workload 2 stayed the same. The flood rate of workload 2 stayed the same. It's not reusing anything.
So I don't see how the rates are changing at all, because for me, it's just the number of axes are doubling and the denominator is also doubling. So maybe
the denominator is not doubling. The denominator, let's say, is a fixed number
of
axes.
But then if you're going to increase the CPU allocation, you'll be able to access more things.
No, but the interval at which you measure reuse and flood rate,
yeah,
remember we said that it's proportional to the size of the cache itself. So that's sort of a fixed quantity.
Repeat that, sorry.
So, and this is my conjecture. That's what your intervals...
No, so repeat that last thing that you just said.
That the duration of the interval is a function of the size of the physical cache.
Okay.
Because in an interval, you want stable observations.
Yes.
For observations to be stable,
mm-hmm,
you actually need to first populate the cache.
Okay, fine.
And then use the stable working set for a long enough period of time that you,
yeah,
get stable numbers.
Yes.
So my interval is a function of the cache size, because
it takes a fixed amount of time to repopulate the whole
but
gap.
Now I have turned this knob and made this process faster.
Right.
This
so within the same interval.
Yeah.
Because that interval doesn't change. It depends on the size of the cache, which hasn't changed.
Right.
So within that same interval, there will be a lot more accesses of A. So the rate of the first workload will increase.
Yes, that's true. Hi, sweetie. Let me call you back. Mundu Tom, yeah? Okay. Hold on. Yeah. I see what you're saying.
Whereas for the other guy, the interval is the same, but he's doing a lot fewer accesses.
So you're saying you still look at, let's say these were 9 accesses, you look at, again, 9, except that you'll have more A's here. This is your point? So to speak.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's what changes the wastage profile, right? Because the reuse rate changes.
I think that all of this can be formalized, and can you can actually predict more precisely if you say that this is.
But this is all my conjecture.
No, but I think that it's doable. I think that we need to start with simpler formulations of this, and say if something is speeded up by 10%, let's say, and something else goes down by 10%, maybe you just have to. And let's say I'd work with 2 workloads and say, what if one goes up and the other goes down? What is its effect? If we don't understand that much, then, you know, there's no point in working with anything that's more complex, right?
I think I understand that, except that we haven't tested any of this stuff, right? So in the proposal, I think it's fine.
No, so you tell me whether you want something like this or not.
Absolutely. I think I'm kind of saying that maybe you don't even bother about the collaboration plan. I'll write it.
Yeah.
But if you can formalize this stuff and talk about this other variant of the cache mapping problem, I think it would be much more valuable use of your time than working on the collaboration plan.
What I'm afraid of is that you will pay a price in another way. This will sound too much foundational stuff and not enough
stuff. But I'm assuming that...
Because all of this is real estate. Again, you put more space for this guy, you're going
to... No, but we'll have to replace the single / multiple cache level with this new formulation. So
that formulation is still needed because...
For the single, yes.
Yeah.
For the single, we would need. But the multiple, because it relies on the merging and such...
I didn't have much for multiple, did I? I'm not even sure I did.
I haven't seen it.
No. So this will all be additional space is what I'm saying. So
I think
you have to pay a price for it.
I think this is pretty foundational, right? I mean,
so
of course,
what this tells me is, can I predict how all the characteristics change as you change the knob of CPU allocation? And that's the point. And I think that this can be somewhat formalized.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be precise. All it says is average behavior has to be in a certain way. And I think that we can also look at... these are really string problems in the end, and we can, even Mario would probably be interested in working on something like this, where it says, okay, we can do synthetic experiments with things like this and show that here is how the characteristics change.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for instance, all the synthetic model validation.
Yeah.
Could be done in your group.
And also the fact that we can even simply play with the identical workloads. That itself, I think, could be quite interesting. Because
identical
I'm sure
in
that
terms of reuse and flood rates? Or
in terms of most of its characteristics.
Or data sharing properties.
Well, let's assume no data sharing. Let's say Google queries you, random people giving you random queries.
The data there is still shared because they're running the same code.
Yes,
because the thread, the way you write threaded code is that you have the same process.
So that's actually interesting. So I hadn't thought of that because now you're saying the A may also appear here.
Yeah, and that's why I was saying earlier that it makes sense for your MRCs to move, you know, when you have the same workload, your MRCs to start looking the same, although you have a much more load because this data is actually being
That's
saved.
Actually another formulation of this. So both are possible. To me, there could be different situations where you run different things. They are very similar in characteristics because of I don't know what. As we said, maybe they're running the same instruction set. So there's a little bit of sharing, but maybe that's not a whole lot. Maybe there's much more number crunching than the actual code.
Yeah, I think the data sharing version is probably a single line. No, it's not.
It just needs to be,
it's kind of a footnote. The more general case of...
So, right. So, that, and I think that starting with simple problems will give us a handle on the effect of this thing. And that's something that I assume in the holistic, it's a fairly important knob for you.
Yes, it is.
So that's why this is foundational, and I thought this would be interesting there.
This absolutely is. So there are two things, right? One is this cache hierarchy mapping or new version where with the vector packing where we maybe expand. We don't need a whole lot, but we could expand
on it. And rewrite some of what I have there. Yeah, that's fine.
You want, for instance, some figure. I can draw it.
Even figure I can do too, but if it's faster and easier for you, that's better, yeah.
If you can, you want something like this? Or something different?
It would be, I think a good picture would be to explain the simple avatar problem. Where you have several MRCs, and maybe you point out all the ankle points, and then maybe highlight one of these and say, if we choose this, this, and this for each of these workloads, here is the actual space that will be used, and here is the actual miss rate that will happen, or something like that. An example, essentially.
Right, okay. And then say that this is actually not that straightforward because of bandwidth issues. And that's one, and second, wastage issues. As you cannot just add up those
ankle points. That's why we need to formulate the simplest version and then address these complexities. But by the way, even the simplest version is already, I mean, bin packing itself is NP-hard. We're looking at this avatar bin packing where each item now has different, I have to pick either this or this or this. So it's just way too hard already. But theoretically, we could say some things about it, and in that sense, it may be interesting. And just like with vector packing, we can come up with some heuristics that would work well.
Okay. All right. So we have a modified game plan now.
Okay. All right. So you're going to do collaboration. I think most of that is probably easy to write.
Yeah, that should be very easy to write. It just takes time. There's no thinking involved.